Good afternoon, everyone. I love days like today. I love the way it calms things down. The summer heat, I don't know, rain somehow just seems to calm society around us, at least in my mind, so I've always enjoyed it. To begin this message, I would like to read an article from The Guardian entitled, Why the Modern World is Bad for Your Brain. And it's from the January 18th, 2015 edition of The Guardian. Our brains are busier than ever before. We are assaulted with facts, pseudo-facts, jibber-jabber, and rumor, all posing as information. Trying to figure out what you need to know and what you can ignore is exhausting. At the same time, we're all doing more. 30 years ago, travel agents made all our airline and rail reservations. Salespeople helped us find what we were looking for in shops. And professional typists or secretaries help busy people with their correspondence. Now we do most of these things ourselves. We're doing the jobs of 10 different people while still trying to keep up with our lives, our children, our parents, our friends, our careers, our hobbies, and our favorite TV shows. Our smartphones have become Swiss Army knives, like appliances that include a dictionary, calculator, web browser, email, Game Boy, appointment calendar, voice recorder, guitar tuner, weather forecaster, GPS, texter, tweeter, Facebook updater, and flashlight. They are more powerful and do more things than most advanced computer at the IBM corporate headquarters 30 years ago. And we use them all the time, part of a 21st century mania for cramming everything we do into every single spare moment of downtime. I'll just take a break from the argument. That is so true. I was recently at a retreat for the medical school, and as soon as we had any bit of time, people were pulling out their phones, texting, reading emails, etc. We text while we're walking across the street, catch up on email while we're standing in a queue, and while having lunch with friends, we serendipitously check to see if what our other friends are doing. At the kitchen counter, cozy and secure in our domicile, we write our shopping lists on smartphones while we are listening to what wonderfully informative podcast on urban beekeeping. But there's a fly in the ointment. Although we think we're doing several things at once, multitasking, this is a powerful and diabolical illusion. Earl Miller, a neuroscientist at MIT and one of the world's experts on divided attention, says that our brains are not wired to multitask well. When people think they're multitasking, they're actually switching from one task to another very rapidly. And every time they do, there's a cognitive cost in doing so. So we're not actually keeping up a lot of balls in the air like an expert juggler. We're more like a bad amateur plate spinner, frantically switching from one task to another, ignoring the one that is not right in front of us, but worried that will come crashing down at any minute. Even though we think we're getting a lot done, ironically, multitasking us makes us demonstrably less efficient. In a draft paper dated April 12, 2002, submitted to the Information Society, which is a peer society, an academic journal for sociologists, in the paper entitled Complexity and Information Overload in Society, Why Increasing Efficiency Leads to Decreasing Control, I'd like to read from the abstract. It is argued that social and technological evolution is characterized by the ephemeralization and accelerating increase in the efficiency of all material, energetic, and information processes. This leads to the practical disappearance of the constraints of space, time, matter, and energy, and thus spectacularly increases our power to physically solve problems. However, the accompanying lubrication or reduction of friction in all the processes creates a number of non-physical problems or problems characterized by the increasing instability, complexity, and reach of casual networks, and therefore decreasing controllability and predictability. As a result, individuals are forced to consider more information and opportunities than they can effectively process. This information overload is made worse by data smog, the proliferation of low-quality information because of easy publication. It leads to anxiety, stress, alienation, and potentially dangerous errors of judgment. Moreover, it holds back overall economic productivity. Now, why this draft paper is 10 years old, and think about it, it was the time before Facebook, before Twitter. It was known to be a problem out there that these words are even more so true today. Just because it's on the internet, just because it's on the newspapers, just because it's on television, doesn't mean the information that is given and the vast quantity of information available to us is without flaw or imperfect or inaccurate. The old data smog noted in that paper from over 10 years ago. We live in a society of overload, and this was predicted for the world at the end times. Turn to Daniel 12, verse 4. Daniel 12, verse 4. Daniel 12, verse 4. It states in Daniel 12, verse 4, "But you, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book until the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall increase." One commentary makes the following observation. The phrase "to and fro" is not to be limited to people literally going from one place to another. While it also does mean that, the words in the Hebrew indicate something that is happening entirely within a person's mind. The minds of the people are casting back and forth as though they are in the midst of a puzzle, a mystery, an enigma they cannot figure out. Or they are all stressed and their minds are flashing back and forth because all that is burdening them. Thus, there appears to be, at the end time, a lack of balance, the inability to decide true values, an artificial artificiality of life, and an outlook that is contrary to nature. In a message I gave a few months ago, I discussed our roles to be ambassadors for Christ, and I focused on 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. If we could just go back there, 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20. In 2 Corinthians 5, verse 20, it says, "Therefore, we are ambassadors for Christ, God making his appeal through us. We implore you on behalf of Christ, be reconciled to God." And in that message, I quoted from the Embassy of the United States in Ottawa, Canada. And within the website, there was a discussion of the role of an ambassador and eight responsibilities. And in my message, I just took out three of those responsibilities. First, an ambassador speaks with one voice to others on U.S. policy. And I mentioned, as ambassadors for Christ, we are to have the mind of Christ and speak the same thing. Not just saying the same words, but having the mind of Christ so deeply in our lives that we all understand and believe the same. Secondly, an ambassador carefully uses mission resources through regular reviews of programs, personnel, and funding levels. And we discussed that, and what I pointed out that as ambassadors for Christ, we're to treasure the resources we have. Our relationship with God, his Spirit working within us, his Word, and especially members of his family, those amongst us today. And finally, an ambassador serves Americans with professional excellence, the highest standards of ethical conduct, and diplomatic discretion. And as we pointed out when we reviewed this, as ambassadors for Christ, we are to have the highest standards and practice diplomacy to one another. We are to be people of excellence. So as a follow-up to that message, I would like to focus on a key component of being an ambassador for Christ to this world. Without it, I do not believe we can properly perform our duties. We cannot properly represent God's kingdom to this world. And this component is found in 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. What is this component? 2 Timothy 1, 7 says, "For God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." The interlinear Greek-English New Testament defines the Greek word for sound mind, which is only used this one time in the Scriptures, as wise discretion. Other versions also define the Greek word as self-discipline, self-control, sound judgment, good judgment, temperance. Stability or sound-mindedness is one of the keys of Paul's writings. And to the stability of faith and of expectation, he adds in this message to Timothy, stability of mind. Sound-mindedness, something which will result in a clear and unobstructed outlook in the affairs of our present life, as well as our spiritual concerns. Paul does not only address this attribute here, but in others' scriptures as well. Let's turn to Titus 2. Titus 2. Titus 2, verse 3. Older men are to be sober-minded, dignified, self-controlled. The Holman Christian Bible says it as follows, states is this scripture as follows. Older men are to be level-headed, worthy of respect, sensible, sound in faith and love and endurance. If we go down to verse 5, older women are to teach younger women to be self-controlled, or as other versions note, the word for self-control to be discreet, sensible, using good judgment, industrious. Then down to verse 6, young men are to be self-controlled. Other versions note the term as live wisely, sensible, discreet, sober-minded. Stability is a key word of Paul's writings. And the stability of faith and expectation, he adds in this epistle, stability of mind. Something that will result in a real sanity of outlook in the affairs of our present life, as well as our spiritual concerns. Our world, whether globally, nationally, regionally, or individually, is just not stable. There's instability all around us. And the battle for our minds, our thoughts, is fierce. And young people, young adults, especially for you, there is a battle for your minds out there. And the way of thinking, they're all trying to convince us on their way, whether it's liberal, whether it's conservative, whether it's Democrat, whether it's Republican, whether it's religious, whether it's secular, and the contrasts go on. There is absolutely a battle for our minds. And the volume and the intensity of these times, of these entreats, can be daunting. And as a result, they can destabilize our thought process. It can cause us to be confused, even lost on our journey. There's a general lack of sound-mindedness among mankind. There's a lack of balance, an inability to determine true values. There's an artificiality of life and an outlook that's contrary to nature all around us. And this outlook can impact us as individuals. Having a key mind is key to our role of being ambassadors for Christ. Going back to 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, Paul is stating that the Spirit of God is not one of fear, but of power and love, and the purpose of this message, of a sound mind. Thus, Paul is contrasting fear with a sound mind. What fears do we have that causes us not to be of sound mind? In the case of Timothy, it was being timid. Paul indicates that Timothy was timid. What are our fears? As much as we don't want to admit it, society plays on our fears. It's a fear of having something, not having what we deserve. It's a fear of not having the American dream. It's a fear of cultures that are not ours in our society today. It's a fear of not having enough, a fear of losing what we have, a fear of not being a success, a fear of being a success, a fear of being a failure, a fear of someone will not like us, a fear of someone will like us. And all the information we have that comes to us, all the words we hear, all the conversations we have can confuse us and sway us, and we could lack sound-mindedness. And thus we become distracted and destabilized. With this as background, I'd like to explore three principles for us to consider in achieving a sound mind. Now, I want to explore these principles by using familiar phrases. And as we examine the phrase, you will come to understand what the principle is. So our first phrase that I would like us to consider in achieving a sound mind, garbage in, garbage out. Garbage in, garbage out. During my tenure in public accounting, we had a phrase we used with regard to the preparation of tax returns, garbage in, garbage out. In other words, the work we could perform on behalf of our clients in preparing a tax return was only as good as the information they gave us. Thus, if the information was incomplete, conversely, the return would be incomplete. Thus, we needed to work very closely with the clients to be sure we had all the correct information necessary to produce an accurate return. Otherwise, it was incomplete, inaccurate, it was garbage out. Are we allowing incomplete information in our minds? Are we allowing bias, emotions, conjecture to cloud our understanding? Then our thoughts, our actions, will be incomplete as well. They'll be incomplete, inaccurate, effectively garbage. It's garbage in, garbage out. Turn to Philippians 4, verse 8. Philippians 4, verse 8. Philippians 4, verse 8. And I like to read from the English Standard Version. Philippians 4, verse 8. Finally, brothers, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and we are to be people of excellence, if there's anything worthy of praise, think about these things. This is what you allow in your mind. Think on these things. What you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, practice these things, and the peace, God of peace, will be with you. So the question we need to ask ourselves, what do we allow in our minds? Is what we see on the internet, what we see on television, or things we say and do with those we associate true, or is it biased? Is it honorable or really less than? Is it just or one-sided? Is it pure or flawed? Is it lovely or dark? Is it commendable or embarrassing? Is it based upon excellence or mediocrity? Is it worthy of praise or something to be hidden? If we are to be sound-minded, we must be guardians of our minds. We must watch what we allow into our minds. And that is an action item. We can't be passive in allowing things into our minds. We need to be determined to think about what we're reading, what we're listening to, and what we're doing. It takes work, it takes discernment, and it takes discipline to set our minds on the right things. Turn to Proverbs 4, verse 20. Proverbs 4, verse 20. And I would like to read from the New Living Translation, if I may. I find sometimes the translation is easier to understand. Proverbs 4, verse 20. My child, pay attention to what I say. Listen carefully to my words. Do not lose sight of them. Let them penetrate deep into your heart, for they bring to life those who find them and healing to their whole body. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course in your life. I'd like to read that again. Guard your heart above all else, for it determines the course of your life. Heart in the Hebrew is a term widely used for feelings, the will, even the intellect. In other words, it's our thoughts. So verse 23 says we should guard our thoughts. We should guard what comes into our mind above else. Why? Because it determines the course of our life. So how are we doing? The second phrase that I would like to consider in achieving a sound mind for us to consider, life is not fair. Life is not fair. When I came to Ambassador College in Pasadena some years ago, I remember, and some of you might remember this phrase as well, when I said it, remember hearing Art Macaro say this. He was a minister who, in a sermon, would state, life is not fair. That phrase stuck with me. He was explaining that things in life do happen, and happen all the time, that are not fair. And we can think of circumstances where this is very true. For example, when a child is born with a defect, is that fair? What did the child do to inherit that? When someone is let go from a job due to economic hard times, when they've worked hard and have a family to support, is that fair? When someone runs a red light and hits our car, we're driving safely, they ran the red light, is that fair? And I'm sure we can come up with many more scenarios. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 11. It states in verse 11, again, I saw that under the sun the race is not to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, nor the bread to the wise, nor the riches to the intelligent, nor favor to those with knowledge, but time and chance happen to them all. One of the most frustrating, but I believe one of the most necessary lessons that we must learn in our walk in this life is that in this physical life, life is not fair. We need to make sense that things happen in this life that are just not fair, that they're wrong, that someone who is doing wrong can prosper and someone who's doing right can fail. It's part of life. And I would surmise that we have all sensed frustration and maybe even a little bitter when we see people sometimes getting away with doing something wrong and how irritating it is to us when justice is not served and the righteous suffer when in fact it should be the other way around. The one who does wrong should have been dealt the blow of justice, and yet they get away with it, and maybe even prosper because of it. Yet it's not always the case in this life, and in this very fallen and imperfect world which we live, justice is not always served. It just isn't. Sometimes life is just not fair, and justice in this physical life is not served. This is not how it should be. It's not what a society should seek. However, injustice and unfairness does happen. The key for us, for those of us who seek being sound-minded, is how do we respond to such situations? Do we have the emotional maturity, the soundness of mind to accept that some things in this physical life are simply just not fair, and then move on and move forward, realizing that we are something, part of something far greater than the here and now. Galatians 6, verse 7. Galatians 6, verse 7. Galatians 6, verse 7. It states in Galatians 6, verse 7, do not be deceived, God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, this shall he also reap. For one who sows to his own flesh will flesh reap corruption, and one who sows to the Spirit will reap eternal life. So how do we combat this, that life is not fair? Well, it states it here at verse 9. Let us not lose heart in doing good. For in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary. So then, when we have the opportunity, let us do good to all people, and especially to those in the household of faith. So when life is not fair and we're embittered, the antidote is to do good, especially to those of God's family. Paul notes that as we see events of life, we should not be deceived, nor discouraged, nor become weary. Challenges of life can cause this to happen. We are reminded that here is something more than the here and now. The focus is what we have is on the eternal. So we do not become discouraged, worried, or deceived. Now, as a final note, I want to say that not everything that happens to us is unfair. Sometimes we, and young people, especially I'm addressing you all, that sometimes we pay a price for making mistakes. That's part of life as well. For example, if someone doesn't save for retirement, well, there might be financial challenges for them when they reach that age and time of life. If someone doesn't get a marketable skill or an education, we may find ourselves financially challenged in this life. If we don't take care of ourselves, our bodies, the temple of the Holy Spirit, we may find later on in life we're having challenges physically. What I'm saying is that we find ourselves in this type of situation. When we find ourselves in times that truly life is not fair, we have the emotional maturity to deal with. Or do we allow ourselves to spin out of control, feel sorry for ourselves, become angry, become hurt and despondent? And it will impact our ability to have a sound mind. The third phrase I would like us to consider, and it's in the form of question, that I would like us to consider in achieving a sound mind. The question is the glass half empty or half full? Is the glass half empty or half full? It has been said that Ben Franklin once asked whether he was an optimist or a pessimist. He replied, "I'm a pessimist. The optimist is too often disappointed. A pessimist is at least occasionally pleasantly surprised." That may be a saving grace for a pessimist to hang their hat on, but we need to also look at the pessimistic side of things at times. There's another adage that goes, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. That way one is ready for whatever happens. People who see a glass as half full are more likely to be satisfied, but conversely may not see a need to make a change. Conversely, they may fail to make changes. And then others who focus on the fact that it's half empty waste all their energy bemoaning that fact. Maybe we know someone like that. Maybe it's ourselves. Clearly, both points of view can be helpful when looking at the glass. Sometimes it is the view we should look at it as half empty, but then also we conversely should look at it as being half full. In other words, we need a clear picture of the glass. It's both. It's both half empty and half full. Despite appearances, the question of a glass being half empty or half full is not a simple one, nor does it have a simple answer. It's a question of perception, how we perceive something that I want to get across here, because perception affects reality. My staff at work has heard me say numerous times, probably they're tired of hearing it, I would say that perception is reality. When, let's say, a department chair is upset and they would come to me, what do we do? Well, they're wrong, or this didn't happen. Stop. Perception is reality for that person. And we need to think about that. It appears to be real. So sometimes our perceptions, though they may not be accurate, appear to be real to us. How we perceive our world has a lot to do with how we live our lives. And no one perception will suffice, will it? There are times when we see the world through rose-colored glasses, and life is wonderful for us. There are other times when we're all gloom and doom because, you know, effectively, life is tough at times, and that might be what we're going through. There are times of joy when we appreciate what we have, and other times of trials and challenges that force us to face up to what needs to be done. There are times when our perception is filtered through specific concerns. We evaluate everything and how it impacts particular goals. Maybe it's our health. Maybe it's our children's well-being. Maybe their future. Maybe our career and so on. Other times we can take a step back and take a more detached view. It's a good thing to take on both perspectives, of course, with balance. The more ways we can see a situation from different perspectives, the better our decision-making process will be, the better chance we will have to have a sound mind. The world is not a simple place, and it's difficult for us to have a complete and true picture of it. Turn to Proverbs 15, verse 22. Proverbs 15, verse 22. States in Proverbs 15:22, without counsel, plans fail, but with many advisors, they succeed. In other words, we can come to a better decision, a better understanding when we involve counsel. When we have people who can bring in the same perspective? No. People who can bring in different perspectives, a different way of viewing things. Some of their perspectives may say the glass is half empty, and the others may say the glass is half full. But it will help us to come to a true picture of what we're trying to deal with. It will help us gain clarity and come up, hopefully, with a sound decision. We need both a half-empty and half-full perspective when viewing situations. The glass can be seen in many different ways, but the real question is, what do we want to do with the glass and its contents? It depends on a lot of things, including how we see it at any given moment. Christ addresses this point when he tells the disciples in John 7:24, do not judge by appearances, or if I may add, by our own perspective, but judge with right judgment. Once again, I'll read that again, John 7:24. Do not judge by appearances. In other words, do not judge merely by our own perspective. We need to take a look, but judge with right judgment. So what is righteous judgment? Turn to Romans 2, verse 2. Romans 2, verse 2. Romans 2, verse 2 states, we know that the judgment of God rightly falls on those who practice such things. Young's literal translation renders the scriptures as follows. And we have known that the judgment of God is according to truth upon those practicing such things. Righteous judgment is having the truth. It's having all the facts. It's seeing matters not from a glass that's half empty nor half full, but having the full perspective, the full truth of what is going on. It's seeing the glass and the contents for what it is. In this ever-increasing, fast-paced world, the need for sound-mindedness is ever more acute. We are bombarded with thoughts and ideas, and there's a battle for every one of our minds out there. In seeking a sound mind, we reviewed three principles, three considerations, by examining phrases that are familiar, and each of these phrases contain a principle. The phrase, garbage in, garbage out, points to the principle that we need to guard our minds. The phrase, life is not fair, points to the principle that we need to be realistic about events in this physical life and actions in this physical life, the here and now, against something greater, the plan of God. And the phrase that was in the form of question, is the glass half empty or half full, points to the principle that we should look at things with all the facts and use righteous judgment and seek counsel when you're examining things and analyzing situations. The bottom line, in order to have sound-mindedness, is we need to transform our thinking, transform our mind. Romans 12, verse 1. Romans 12, verse 1. Romans 12, verse 1, I beseech you, therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And do not be conformed to this world, but be you transformed by the renewing of your mind, that you may prove, not accept, prove what is good and acceptable and the perfect will of God. We need to prove. It's not enough just to believe. It has to be proven. God's Spirit is not one of fear, but of a sound mind. That is the nature of God's Spirit. But as the scriptures we have examined today show, it's an action item we need to do in order to have sound-mindedness. We need to prove what is good and acceptable. We just do not allow thoughts and ideas to come with our mind with the hope that God's Spirit will somehow decide what is good and what is wrong. We need to prove. We need to take time to think and evaluate, to guard our thinking, to keep a proper perspective about this physical life, to seek truth and righteous judgment when evaluating a matter. We use these principles to determine what is good and what is acceptable, to prove to ourselves that we're not conformed to this world thinking. There's so much going on around us. Knowledge is everywhere. We need to filter what comes into our minds, or it can destabilize us. And how do we accomplish this? By prayer, meditation, fasting, and using our compass. Our compass is the Bible. Because when you use a compass when you're hiking, it tells you what's true north, and you won't become lost. When we are bombarded and struggling to find our way, we need to take our compass, the Bible, and find the true path. As ambassadors for Christ, having a sound mind is necessary as we represent God and His kingdom on this earth. We need to be the guardians of our minds, of our thoughts, to be sure that they conform with the acceptable and perfect will of God. This is the key to being sound-minded.